Well, here on Radio Catskill, WJFF Jeffersonville.
Welcome to a special edition of The Middle, coming to you from the UBS Forum at Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. This week, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Catherine Richert from Minnesota Public Radio News. The city of Minneapolis has become ground zero for the Trump administration's immigration enforcement efforts in recent weeks. And now, following the fatal shootings by federal authorities of Alex Preti and Renee Nicole Good, it could be at the leading edge of a change in policy.
This hour, we're going to hear from Minnesotans in our live studio audience about what they've been through, their hopes and concerns, their message to the rest of the country, and what they believe it'll take to heal and move forward.
So stay right here. A special edition of The Middle in partnership with Minnesota Public Radio starts right after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. Large sections of the government are shut down. President Trump is urging House Republicans to support a funding package that passed out of the Senate last week as part of a compromise with Democrats. But as NPR's Claudia Grisales reports, Speaker Mike Johnson is facing objections among Republicans.
The Senate made changes to the House-passed bipartisan package after federal agents shot and killed Alex Preti. They kept five funding bills in place, but paused full appropriations for DHS. Senate Democrats agreed to a deal that would fund DHS for 2 weeks as they negotiate reforms for agents involved in immigration raids. However, it's not clear the House has enough bipartisan votes to approve the plan, with some Democrats saying it falls short and some Republicans saying it goes too far. The funding plan would allow several agencies to reopen, including the Departments of Defense, Transportation, and Health and Human Services. For now, workers for those agencies and more are either furloughed or working without pay. Claudia Salas, NPR News.
Last week's release of more than 3 million files relating to Jeffrey Epstein continues to shine new light on his powerful associates. NPR's Stephen Fowler reports.
Jeffrey Epstein surrounded himself with notable and influential figures in politics, academia, science, and more. The latest batch of Epstein files reveal how deep and personal those ties got. Epstein wrote about meeting with the founder of the 4chan image board website, texted with wellness icon Deepak Chopra about financial advice, and invited many people to his homes and island even after he was convicted of sex crimes. Conversing with Epstein and being in the files do not imply any wrongdoing or affiliation with those crimes. Stephen Fowler, NPR News.
President Trump says the U.S. is creating a nearly $12 billion stockpile of rare earth elements.
Just as we have long had a strategic petroleum reserve and a stockpile of critical minerals for national defense, we're now creating this reserve for American industry. So we don't have any problems.
The move is an attempt to counter China's dominance in these metals, which are crucial for modern electronics. China controls about 70% of the world's rare earth mining and about 90% of processing, giving it leverage in trade talks. President Trump says he is moving to close the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. for 2 years. He made the announcement after a wave of cancellations by artists since he ousted the performing arts venue's leadership and added his name to the building. He says the proposal is subject to approval by the board of the Kennedy Center, which he has stocked with allies. And President Trump says he will lower tariffs on goods from India to 18% from 25% after Indian President Minister Narendra Modi agreed to stop buying Russian oil. Trump has been pressuring India to cut its reliance on cheap Russian crude to pressure Moscow to end its invasion of Ukraine. This is NPR News from Washington. A landslide last week collapsed tunnels at a mine in eastern Congo, killing at least 200 people. The mine has been controlled by M23 rebels since 2024, though the rebels and Congolese government have traded accusations over responsibility. It's one of the deadliest disasters in recent memory in an area already facing a displacement crisis. An international sports tribunal in Switzerland denied an appeal by U.S. sled racer Katie Uhlander today. She hoped to compete in the Milan Cortina Winter Games, but she says she was cheated out of competition by a point-rigging scheme. The Court of Arbitration for Sport ruled it lacks jurisdiction in the case, as NPR's Brian Mann reports.
This scandal began last month when Uhlander competed well in a qualifying skeleton sled race and hoped to win enough qualifying points to secure a spot on the U.S. Olympic team. But she alleges a Canadian coach manipulated the point system, costing her what would have been a sixth trip to the Winter Games. The U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee called Ulander's treatment unfair. A major international sled federation also said point manipulation did occur, but Ulander was still sidelined, so she filed one last appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. A review panel ruled that for technical reasons they lacked jurisdiction, leaving Ulander out of these Olympics. Brian Mann, NPR News, Milan.
A cherub bearing a resemblance to Italian Premier Giorgia Meloni that appeared in a Roman church has sparked a minor scandal for both church and state. The diocese and the Italian Culture Ministry both announced investigations into the recent renovations at the Basilica of San Lorenzo. You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Skoll Foundation, dedicated to powering social innovators to transform the world. Learn more at skoll.org. And Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Welcome to a special edition of The Middle in collaboration with Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm Jeremy Hobson, coming to you from the UBS Forum at NPR Studios in St. Paul, Minnesota, and Catherine Richard of NPR News is here with me, as is a live studio audience of Minnesotans. And Catherine, the Twin Cities, where we are, have really become the center stage for the national conversation about not just immigration, but also our democracy.
Yeah, you know, in the last few weeks, Minnesotans have seen thousands of federal agents descend on the Twin Cities specifically, but of course, this is happening throughout the rest of the state too. We've seen ICE enforcement in Rochester, where I live, Willmar up north as well. And with the killing of Alex Preti and before that, Renee Good, it's sparked protests, it's sparked demonstrations in the streets and other acts of violence too.
And we should note, ICE, even though there's been a change in tone in the last few days from the Trump administration and a new leader in Tom Homan, the border czar coming into Minnesota, and Greg Bovino, who was here before leading, being removed from his post, ICE is still here.
Right. We've just in the last 24 hours documented additional ICE enforcement. So, you know, the headlines, the conversation that's happening sort of at the higher levels suggests that the rhetoric is toning down. ICE agents are going to be ostensibly pulled out of the state. Yet I still think there's a great deal of fear. And obviously what we're documenting out there in our communities sort of contradicts that narrative a bit.
Well, and I was able to visit the memorial to Alex Preti where he was killed in South Minneapolis. And then not far away from that, by the way, is the George Floyd Memorial from many years ago, which is still being maintained. Creating, you know, a national movement that occurred many years ago around Black Lives Matter. What does it say that all of this is happening here? Is there something to the fact that this is all happening in Minneapolis, and are they connected?
Well, I would say it's really hard to watch what's been happening in Minneapolis without thinking about the civil unrest that happened after George Floyd was murdered. That felt more shorter lived, I guess. And really, it was a conflict between local law enforcement and protesters and the Black Lives Matter movement then and state leaders, right? Here we have a federal action within our state, and it's much bigger and much more widespread. I think to kind of understand and maybe connect the dots a little bit, you'd have to go back to the 2024 election when Governor Tim Walz was at the top of the ticket with Kamala Harris, obviously trading barbs with President Trump at the time in a very public way. And then more recently, of course, we've had these questions around fraud in Minnesota involving some of our immigrant communities, and that fraud is being litigated in the courts right now. So you tie all these things together, and while maybe someone who's listening from in a different state might wonder why Minnesota, I think for us living here, it actually makes a lot of sense that there's been a lot of focus on Minnesota.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the fraud issue, because I think if you watch certain media, that you're hearing about that all the time. But that actually led Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, who was the vice presidential candidate in 2024, to drop out of the race for governor. And we've just gotten news, you know, in recent days that Amy Klobuchar, the senator, the Democratic senator in Minnesota, is now going to run for governor. The politics in the state have changed dramatically in the last few
weeks.
Right.
I mean, it feels like a lifetime ago, but it really, I think, was 3 weeks ago that I was on the air doing a live show, and Governor Tim Walz had just said, I will not be running again for a third term. I think Republicans felt like they had a really good shot at getting the winning the governor's race up until that point. He dropped out. Amy Klobuchar's name quickly came up as someone who might run. And then Renee Macklin Good was shot. And I think what we've seen just in the last few weeks is that Republicans here locally have started to really criticize what they're seeing happen on the streets of Minneapolis. It stands to reason that that might be one reason why we're hearing the Trump administration say we're going to take a step back here a little bit.
So you mentioned that you have been taking calls from people. And this is what we're here to do now, is to hear from Minnesotans and see what they think and how they're feeling about this. But what have you found as you've been hearing from Minnesotans over the last few days?
Wow. Well, I mean,
we should note that a huge line is forming.
This is
now,
wonderful.
Which is wonderful. We're going to hear from many of you just momentarily.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Okay. So I think we are still hearing that there is a ton of fear out there, whether you're someone who has been in the streets documenting ICE enforcement, protesting, but also people who are afraid to leave their homes for fear of being detained. The economic impacts of that are enormous. Mm-hmm. I also think that in the midst of all of this, and maybe these are headlines that aren't being made nationally, I hear hope, and here's why I hear hope from people. People are finding community in new ways that they couldn't have anticipated a few weeks ago through mutual aid efforts. There are people who are coordinating over Signal and other social media to give people rides to work, to walk their dogs, to offer legal services, mm-hmm. just to bring food. And I'm hearing, like, this gives me hope. This makes me proud to be Minnesotan right now.
All right, well, let's hear from some Minnesotans. And if you could just say your name and where you live, and then tell us what you think.
My name is Janelle Austin. I live in South Minneapolis. My home is two blocks away from where George Floyd was lynched. It is four blocks away from where Renee Nicole Good's life was stolen. And it's about 5 minutes away from the memorial of Alex Pretty. This morning, ICE was heavily present in our neighborhood. Our group chats were going off and neighbors were showing up. Just because the president say he's pulling back doesn't mean we see that on the ground. The grief is heavy. Where I work, Rise and Remember, we're housed in Pillsbury House and Theater. A two-year-old child was kidnapped in the house behind our office buildings. So we're feeling it. We're feeling it deeply.
I can hear in your voice that fear. And I feel like as we're weeks, months out from this, that fear is probably the thing that we're still going to be grappling with.
I think it's grief more than fear.
Yeah. Mm.
We're not afraid. We are standing up to ICE as neighbors. We are feeding our neighbors. We are helping them pay rent. We are helping the businesses. And we are not afraid, but we are grieving.
What are you grieving?
We are grieving the death of our neighbors. We are grieving the loss of people being kidnapped. We are grieving the economic turmoil of people not knowing like how they're going to be able to pay their rent. We have suffered loss after loss after loss after loss after loss after loss here in Minnesota. We had the shootings, the school shooting last fall. We had the death of the Horman family. Mm-hmm. We've had Dante Wright, Amir Locke, George Floyd, Philando Castile, Jamar Clark, and then the list goes on and on and on. And we have not been able to come up for air because the government keeps killing us. I need people to understand that we are not afraid, but boy, are we exhausted and are we grieving.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming up. Let's go to somebody over here.
Hi, my name is Vivian Mims, and I am a native of St. Paul, Minnesota in the Rondo community. My parents bought the home I'm in during the Jim Crow when they moved up here in the 50s, and we're still in it. But the community has changed. I'm hoping and I'm praying that it brings back neighborhood. You know, I listened to the young lady there where there's so much diversity and so many different cultures surrounding me. When I grew up, it wasn't just a community after they put in 94, but it was a neighborhood. You knew your neighbors. And now you're not, it's coming back to that because of the tragedy. And I think that that's a wonderful thing. Okay. It's traumatic what we're going through, but we'll be stronger on the other end. And I love Minnesota. I love NPR. Thank you for doing this today. And I hope everybody can keep love in their heart and know that it will overpower and overcome all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is Joe Landsberger, and for the sake of your listeners, I'm an 80-year-old lifelong resident of St. Paul, in fact, a neighborhood not far from this location on 7th Street. I'm also a survivor of the Vietnam War protests, the AIDS crisis, and so in a sense, that activism informs what's happening today, I think. That we are not just passive in these crises. Last year, I published a history of Minnesota, and I didn't talk about the big names of the state. It was rather the immigrant communities that came and formed not only this city, but the state. It's the oldest neighborhood of the state, the oldest commercial strip of the state. And one of the things that struck me in doing the research was that there were 12 different languages that were spoken on West 7th Street, right down from this hall. And when you think about how did they communicate with each other, there was never any riots or whatnot. It was a very diverse community. Mm-hmm. And what I did is, with the election of Trump, I thought, I have to do something. And so I dedicated all the money from the sales of the book and the stipends to nonprofits that I saw would definitely be in need, anticipating what Trump's up to.
Can I ask, have you gotten involved at all with your history of activism in the past? Have you gotten involved in any of the protests around what's happening now with ICE, or have you stayed away?
Probably once or twice a week, I'm standing on a street corner.
Wow. And are you worried for your safety when you do that?
I'm not really concerned, because what happens will happen. I remember one particular protest out 7th. I was leaving, and there were three guys with a fancy kind of camera, not dressed for the weather, videotaping me as I was walking towards them. And I knew what was happening, but I didn't miss a step. I just kept going right for them and right up to that camera.
Catherine, we're going to get to more members of our studio audience, but I do wonder, as you've been speaking with people on the air, listening to callers, have many people been actually taking part in the protests, or have they been staying away?
I think we're hearing from a lot of people who are maybe protesting for this first time or becoming constitutional observers for the first time. And there's a distinction, too. There are trainings going around all over the state, including in my community of Rochester, where people are learning how to document ICE enforcement. And it's something they never maybe thought they would ever do. So in some ways, I think this is igniting activism in communities and in people who maybe, you know, a month ago never envisioned doing that.
All right, well, stand by, because we're going to get to more members of our studio audience in just a moment. I'm Jeremy Hobson, along with Catherine Richard of NPR News, and you're listening to a special edition of The Middle from St. Paul, Minnesota.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, physician and healthcare policymaker Zeke Emanuel.
A lot of the wellness gurus out there, they make things way too complicated.
So how does Emanuel see wellness?
It should be something that you actually enjoy.
The wellness industry is gigantic and mostly wrong. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Warming centers are open across our region to provide a safe, heated place for anyone who needs it. If you or someone you know needs a warm place to go, you can find a full list of locations and hours at wjffradio.org. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
This is a special edition of The Middle coming to you from the UBS Forum at Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. I'm Jeremy Hobson, along with Catherine Richard from NPR News, and we are joined by a live audience of Minnesotans. Catherine, as we record this, there's been a new video circulating that shows Alex Pretty many days before he was shot and killed, spitting at ICE agents, kicking an ICE vehicle. There have been some online, some on the right especially, who have said, well, that changes the narrative around him. What has the reaction been here?
I think generally what I'm hearing is that video is unconnected and irrelevant to what happened this past Saturday when Alex Pretty was shot. Different day. We've interviewed many people now who knew Alex Pretty, and you know, he was a nurse at the VA. He was known for being caring and thoughtful. So, I think people who know him are saying it has nothing to do with the fact that he was shot.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back to the audience. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, thanks for being here. My name is Robin Hickman Winfield, and I'm a proud fifth-generation Minnesotan, a long line of social justice activists, fourth-generation St. Paul. And I come here standing in the stead for the young people who are traumatized. I'm a teacher at Gordon Parks High School, and that's a school that's named after my great uncle, who I promised I would keep his legacy alive. And the gentleman in the last segment talked about history at a time when history is being erased. History is our armor. And for the young people that I teach that walk in the footsteps of Gordon Parks, history is their armor. My scholars are fortified by the history of Gordon Parks. And my Latino and Somali and Hmong students are virtually learning because they can't leave the house. Last week, I played the song in class before some of the students decided not to come to school any longer, a song by Donnie Hathaway, "Someday We'll All Be Free." And I just want to quickly read the final project of Julio, who didn't come to class, but he decided to finish his final project. As a Park scholar, my vision of peace is to have everyone work together as a community to fight the justice and what's right for ourselves and each other, to be free and view equality as those superior to us, the people who would view us as nothing more than monsters thrown in cages. Peace will prevail, and the real monsters will be revealed. And then Alicia, whose uncle chose to move her to Wisconsin because he didn't want his baby girl to be snatched up. Oh, and again, and Julio's family cannot leave the house. Mm-hmm. Julio's afraid to leave the house, but Alicia wrote, "As a Park scholar, my vision of peace is a world where innocent people are protected and communities do not have to live in fear. Peace means safety, justice, and accountability, especially marginalized families. I believe that peace exists when systems are meant for people to not be harmed and be treated with dignity and humanity." And these are young people who couldn't find the words before they found themselves not treated with dignity. Yeah. And my Hmong student, Civic, was coming to school every day before he saw the picture of a Hmong man taken from him, his home in boxer shorts and Crocs. So we must see about these young people. We have to pay attention to how the young people are being traumatized, but legacy will be the light that will lift up Minnesota as leaders and a beacon for the nation.
I am curious, with students not coming to school, obviously we know what the impacts of that are from our experience with the pandemic. What has your school been doing to support these students when they are afraid to come?
Like many of the awesome schools throughout Minnesota, definitely in St. Paul and Minneapolis, the teachers are rallying around, the parents are rallying around. We're collecting food, we're delivering food to the homes of our families. We're making sure that they're taken care of, because that's what we do here in Minnesota. We are a beacon for the nation. We're making sure that our students have. But to cry with a 17-year-old young man who's telling me, "Miss Robin, I'm the only one in my family who can leave the house." You know, and I mean, it's just heartbreaking. My neighbor across the street was snatched up. My young Hmong friend who's caring for his Hmong mother was snatched up, and he volunteers at an organization that serves Black people. Mm-hmm. You know, this is real. And I wonder, what is this truck that keeps parking across the street? Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, he was snatched up. It's very, very personal. And I can't get off this mic with saying the hope piece for me. For 10 years, I walked and went to Perkins every month with a former Minnesota Republican governor and former congressman, Governor Al Quie. There is hope. We can sit down together and walk together and learn from each other. That's my hope statement. So let's start coming together and figuring this thing out.
Let me ask you, Catherine, thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, Catherine, she brings up the former Republican governor. This is a state that, yes, it has gone for the Democrat in all of the last presidential elections in recent memory. But also, it's, you know, a 55-45 state. There are a lot of Republicans in Minnesota.
Our legislature is totally split. Yeah, that's an indication of that.
We have started to see Republicans in Washington and here in Minnesota start to question the severity of Operation Metro Surge, the surge of ICE agents into Minneapolis. Are you seeing the politics change on the right in this state, or are there still many who say, I'm happy that this is happening?
So let me break that down. I do think in the last few weeks, we have seen some notable Republicans in Minnesota come out and question the severity of this crackdown. I would say most notably, Chris Madel, who was a GOP candidate for governor and actually was giving legal advice to Jonathan Ross, who shot Renee Macklin Good just a few days ago, pulled out of the race and cited what is happening as the reason why he said it was a disaster, his words. All that being said, nationally speaking, some new polling suggests that people are growing concerned about how immigration enforcement is happening. We're seeing some Republicans in Washington start to question this, but by and large, I still think the party is fairly much in lockstep on how things have been going there.
Hmm. Let's get to another commenter from the audience.
Peace. My name is Tish Jones. I'm a poet. My family has been in St. Paul for 5 generations. I'm the 4th generation. And what I'm interested in just offering are 2 things. One is that there is a nefarious and violent, albeit often unintentional, erasure of the work that was done during the moments after George Floyd was murdered. There's this way in which there is a comparison that does harm to the question of how Minnesota, not why Minnesota, but how Minnesota. If we ask that question and think about how we can do some power mapping and power building that will demonstrate a continuum and the action and the work that happened in this state. So, and what I'm getting at is we're more unified now. We're building differently. We have more systems. All those things happened because of the work that we did after George Floyd was murdered. So the pods that we created, the establishment of mutual aid systems that we created, those things, I think we're asking the sort of really cute and commercial question of why, right? But the how is the piece that's going to actually help the nation, that really answers the question for the nation of how Minnesota was able to resist in this way.
You're talking about resistance. What about the idea of unifying after the fact? Could you sit down and have a lunch with somebody who is an ICE officer right now? Or do you think that, or is there no healing between the two sides after that?
For me personally, at this moment, while ICE is still here snatching up families, babies, etc., that's not my mission. My mission is to work with the community to connect them with resources, to keep them safe, to continue the education around liberation, freedom, and resistance. That's my mission.
Mm. Hi, thank you. My name is Charlie Ann Hutt. 69-year-old white guy from South Minneapolis, just for, first of all, I'd like to just mention, you referenced the video of Alex, 11 days
Freddy,
before
yeah.
he
yeah.
was killed. I see those two videos, and I see a very angry man the first time, and the video starts immediately when he's really angry. Something happened before, because in that other video, there's a very calm man. So I think this is like in the NFL, in the football, they're looking at the guy who responded to something that happened beforehand. I look forward to somebody else coming out with a video that shows the whole event. Anyway, that's not my, my point is I've been involved for over 12 years with an organization called Isaiah and Faith in Minnesota. We're a power-based organization, and like the young lady who just spoke very eloquently, what I